Hey guys, Mark from the GAK.co.uk Guitar Shop podcast here. Just dropped in at the beginning of the podcast to remind you all that if you want the inside scoop on any news or any deals that we've got going on at the shop, do follow us on Twitter at GAK_co_UK. You can also follow the podcast guys individually. You can follow me at Mark_random. You can follow Matt at Matt_nightsy. You can follow Jay at JAYBN1. And you can follow Joe at Joseph_900. Hello and welcome to the GAK.co.uk Guitar Shop podcast. I'm your host Mark Packham, who is with me this evening.
Hello, my name's Jay. I'm the assistant manager here in the guitar shop.
You don't, clearly don't have a voice left.
No, I did some. We went to football earlier in the week, and we did a lot of shouting. And I thought it'd be okay. I thought one day that's fine. It's actually worse than it was yesterday. So
who else is here?
Hello, my name's Matt, and I am the manager.
And I'm Joe, and I'm here for bass-related issues.
Both sounding very bassy and very sensual
well,
this evening.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah. How is everyone? The first time we've all been here in 2015.
Yeah, yeah, sorry, that was my fault. But yeah,
just couldn't be bothered.
Back. I was busy.
Still hungover from New Year's Eve.
Yeah, still celebrating New Year.
Woo!
Party!
Party!
So loads of news and stuff to talk through this week. Obviously, we are fast approaching NAMM. By the time this goes out, this will go out on what, Monday, Tuesday, and NAMM starts on Thursday, I believe.
Actually, one thing I was going to say.
NAMM.
One thing when we get into news is there's a product on here that's not on here, but there is news.
Can we talk about it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, fine. Well, let's get around to that.
Pedal Train are discontinuing everything.
Everything.
What? I almost put that on this list. And did then, I not? Oh, no, I didn't put this
Pedal
on this
Train
list.
Train are discontinuing everything and reissuing some of them, but in total they've got 11 new models. They've done like
what?
A complete.
They can't just get into even the PT1.
They're doing a complete.
The PT1's like.
They're doing a completely new line.
They discontinued everything.
Everything.
But that's the one that started it all.
A completely new line, and most of them will now come with the option of gig bag, hard case, or flight case.
Oh, that's okay. Genius. That's
which
very
is quite
clever.
Cool. So they're doing like the Nano, and then they're doing the Nano Plus, which I think is going to be slightly wider for a wah pedal, so you can still have a small board, but it's not too tall.
Are they going to deal with the introduction of micro pedals?
Yes.
Well, that's
one of
yes.
the biggest problems.
Because basically, I think they've got one called the Vista, in a couple of sizes, where the bottom three runs are closer together.
I know,
than the top
I know
run,
we've spoken about yeah. that before, but I was wondering well, whether all of them are now going to cater
no,
for the
some
fact
of them
that
are.
Some of this is there, a so there's 11. I can't remember because I saw the sheet and I can't remember exactly how it is. Basically, all of the from what I can remember, all of the existing products. So the PT1, the PT2, the PT3. The Grande,
Junior.
The Pro, and the Junior are all still. They've just been rebranded. They've just
no,
been,
they're right. actually no. They're not doing a one. They're the only ones.
They're not doing the
no,
one.
The
only
one is, when they started, they only did that.
Yeah,
that was
well,
the
basically,
only
the
track.
Only ones they're keeping are the Pro, the 2, which has been renamed, and the Junior.
Yeah.
And the Nano.
And the El Grande, which they've called something else.
It's now called the something 42.
The El Massive.
In fact, I think it's a different size to the El Grande. I think it's
really?
Not as wide, but it's deeper.
Wow.
It was
but
like,
it comes with, you,
just,
you can get,
just
think,
a square.
I think you can get a gig bag option. Imagine that.
That's crazy. Because, well, the picture we saw of it, it's so, like, obviously, you've got the frame of it. This is, I mean, this is
great radio.
The great radio. Me trying to like
flailing your arms around.
You know how it's like that long, or whatever, and then there's a bar in the middle.
Yeah.
The way that they demonstrated how big it was they took an M13, like one of the biggest multi effects units you can buy, and that took up the entire of only it only took up one side.
Okay.
And then the other side, you had that many individual pedals. It was
how many M13s deep was it? Could you effectively have four?
No, you right. could no. no you could only fit what you could only fit. You could fit two M13s on it.
Yeah, no, but you could probably fit four M9s.
Okay. How many M5s?
Yeah.
Eight. No, oh, probably more than that.
Yeah, I reckon more. From the way you've described it,
I've got to say actually, was it? Was it on the Facebook group that someone posted their pedal board and they had three Eventide H9s?
Yes, yeah, okay. How good is that?
That guy is also a hero. That was
he plays a Bass 6 with a matching headstock.
Not just a Bass 6 with a matching headstock, a Fiesta Red Bass 6 with a matching headstock with flat wounds.
Yeah, through
it.
A vintage Ampeg B15.
The greatest bass amp of all time.
I was like,
how
do you run them? And he was like...
I saw that and I was like, oh, that is literally the best setup anyone could ever have.
They've kind of snuck up on the pedal world, the H9. Like, whenever I see, like, on the pedal boards of Doom Group and on the Iron Group, they're often, like, on people's boards. And to be honest, I'm not 100% sure what they do, but
it's basically,
they're always there.
It's the fancy M5, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like the M5 is all the Line 6 modellers. The H9 is all the Eventide modellers.
Okay.
But they do three different... ones. They do the H9 like basic, so it's got no algorithms in. You have to purchase all the algorithms you want to put in it. Then they do the one that's got like some but not all of them, a little one from each pedal, and then they do the max, which has got every single algorithm
in. If you buy the basic one, it's just blank essentially.
It's got nothing in it. Yeah, I think it's got one sound in it.
It's like the like a really posh version of the Digitech iStomp.
Yeah, basically, because you can obviously you've got
what a pedal to reference.
Yeah, but effectively that's kind of that's because you purchase the other sounds and then.
So that's quite cool because it means that you can just take the like individual sounds that you want rather than, for example, buying like a you can get all the space sounds from it.
Yeah, yeah.
So rather than just buying like an Eventide space, if the only one you want is the black hole, which let's face it, the black hole is the setting that
is. Can you do that though, or are you buying the modeller to go in there essentially?
You're buying an algorithm, so that the black hole is an algorithm from the Eventide space. You buy that sound.
Okay.
How much do they retail at?
The max is £549.
I meant if you bought the basic and you were buying individual sounds. And then per
quid?
Sound?
And then I think per sound it's like a few quid or something.
Right,
like that.
Okay. A few quid? Kind of like an app. Yeah. Sort of
wow.
Thing.
That's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah. But then again, that's good because if you go, yeah, well, I only want the black hole setting from the space, but I want the tremolo from the mod factor and a delay. Yeah. Or, you know, and then something from the pitch factor or whatever. You only want to put four sounds in it. And then it's easy to just scroll up and down through all the presets.
Yeah, they look great.
The possibilities that you've got from that, and it's all Bluetooth controlled from your phone. So I spoke to someone today, and they, I sold a Big Sky to someone today, and he was like, "Oh yeah, I use an H9 as well." And I was like, "Oh yeah, I've kind of think about integrating one on my board." And he's like, "Yeah, well, I sing as well, like backing vocals. So I mount my iPad onto my mic stand, and then control the pedals. I can do like expression stuff with the iPad while it's Bluetooth to the H9 on the floor."
But you're definitely going to end up doing that.
But then because it's got Bluetooth like that, you could, in theory, Bluetooth into an iPad into the H9. Could you then use the livid guitar wing to control the H9?
I don't know. What's the? I don't know.
No, you go to the guitar wing into your laptop and then a USB into the H9 and then do it that way.
That way would definitely work. Yeah, because it's only a controller, isn't it? It's just a wireless controller essentially. I'm really surprised you haven't bought one of these guitar wings yet.
Well, I know. I need a...
You need a reason.
Yeah.
And now we've just found one. Very good. So some of the other new stuff, getting back slightly more on track. Some of the other stuff I thought we could talk about. Firstly, the new Fender FSRs, some of which...
FSR!
I think... I'm not sure how they're tied in with NAMM, really, because they're here now. They're in stock, but I didn't know anything about them before that, before the sort of NAMM stuff. But they're here. So FSRs and also the limited sandblasted series.
I don't think that the FSR stuff is necessarily a NAMM thing.
No,
because
it doesn't work like that, does it?
They just trickle through.
The thing is, I think big companies like that don't do it that way, do they? They release all their products. Like Gibson are definitely at NAMM going to be like, oh, here's all the 2015s you saw in October.
Oh, yeah.
Then, big companies kind of just announce everything pre-NAMM.
Some do and some don't, I think. Like, a lot, there is still definitely a lot of stuff that
regardless of whether or not it's NAMM, this is the coolest selection of FSR Fender stuff that we've seen in ages.
But there's like they're not the, as well as the FSR stuff. There's also the new stuff for this year, which I think I mean it's on the internet. I think we can talk about it. I don't think it's embargoed.
Let's not talk about that for now. We'll talk about that next week after NAMM. Okay. After NAMM's all wrapped up.
There's some really cool stuff. Like we've seen a preview of what's coming for next year, and yeah, I think I don't think it's embargoed, but like
it definitely is embargoed.
Okay. I've seen a lot of people talking about it.
Fender embargo.
It definitely is embargo.
Well, anyway.
But we can talk about the stuff that we've already had through.
Yeah, okay.
So, sandblasted series. Joe Branton, you took pictures of these when they arrived for the website.
I wanted to talk about the FSR stuff, but yes, we could talk about
Let's do sandblasted first. So what are they?
Well, if you're really into topography, then this is the bass or guitar for you.
Is that the measuring of the height of hills?
Yeah, because that's what it looks like.
Okay. It does look like a sort of ordnance survey map. Top.
Yeah, yeah, that's what it looks like.
But also very cool. Looks like a super old bit of wood.
It must be done by hand.
Yeah, I don't...
I don't think it's done by hand.
Oh, surely there's sandblasted,
yeah, I think it's done with some sort of sand gun.
Yeah, but you would have thought if they blasted the whole thing with sand, it would all be one level. It wouldn't be that the grooves would go down.
Well, no, because isn't that the grain of the wood, and it's like firing into the grain sort of thing. So
yeah,
it's bringing
the grain's going to vary on every guitar, isn't it?
Yes, of course it is, which is what they've said about them. That's why only 14 have been released to the UK.
14 of each model, though?
Yeah, sorry, that's what I meant, yeah.
Is it because there's the Strat... I know that there's definitely a P bass and a jazz bass, and they both come in two colours. They come in a red and a blue.
Yeah,
that's right.
Crimson and sapphire.
Yeah, crimson.
Is there
sapphire.
Also that in Strats and Tellys
that's
as well?
That's exactly right. All right. Maple necks.
And is there 14 of each?
Yes.
I believe so.
Right, okay.
Yes. Yeah, so split between all the dealers in the UK.
Right, okay.
I don't know about 14 of each colour, but there's 14 of each model in the UK.
Right, okay.
Yeah. But yeah, they came in as the American sandblasted series, but they're kind of like a new Highway 1 American special type vibe.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's the 70s logo on the headstock.
Coming in a gig bag.
Yeah,
six-point trim.
Yeah.
Same. Well, actually, I don't know this for a fact, but certainly when I had a mess around on the jazz bass and the P bass, they certainly felt like the slim profile necks that go on the specials.
Yeah, well, they've also, I don't know about the basses, but with the Strat, it's jumbo frets as well.
So they are,
which is essentially it's like a souped up body American special.
Yeah.
Right.
They look very cool. I mean, I sold the P bass today.
Did you?
Yeah. Sorry.
I photographed that the other day.
You photographed it for me.
It's the only one we're getting.
You know, when you take photos,
yeah.
The purpose of that is to sell the things.
No, the purpose of it is
for
so
you to get excited so that you can go home and then look at them on your, I don't know, camera phone? Is that what the... Have a look at your camera phone at night and show Emma and be like,
"That's right.
Which one should I play tomorrow?" And she's like, "Leave me alone.
I'm trying to sleep. It's 4 a.m.
Get away from me."
But the red one or the
blue
one.
I don't even like you anymore. Stop coming into.
We broke up 4 years ago.
Stop breaking into my house. Anyway, so the sandblasted stuff. Do we not pick up soon the basses? Because it's Texas Specials in the guitars.
They are the vintage pickups.
So that's the same as what you get
same
in
as
the,
what you get in the special. In, so they appear, yeah. appear in loads of other stuff. Like on the jazz basses, you get the vintage. I did inverted commas in the air there.
Yeah.
The pickups in like the Geddy Lee and the 60s reissue and the 70s as well.
Okay.
And on the Precision, I don't know what you get the vintage ones in there. Probably the 70s reissue, I imagine.
Yeah, and maybe something like the Nate Mendel, that kind of thing.
No, the Nate Mendel has quarter pounders.
Oh, so it does. Yeah, you're right. So I think these are going to split opinion, and I think they've kind of split opinion here, really. I think they're... But, I mean, it's kind of a testament that we've sold one already.
Oh, well, yeah, they're selling. I mean, they're incredibly limited edition, so they definitely...
I didn't really like the look of them.
No, they're too modern. It looks like Fender doing Schecter to me.
It was... yeah, I guess so. I mean, I didn't really like the look of them, but then I plugged one in today, and it felt really nice. And actually, I don't know, it was weird. It was... I just quickly played the jazz bass... with plectrum, sorry, Joe. Just yeah.
That's all right. It's okay.
Okay.
It's okay.
I can grip my teeth. and it felt cool. Like I liked it. I mean, I'd be very concerned that my plectrum would get like stuck in one of the grooves and then like flip out mid-song or whatever.
That's one thing that we have to emphasise about these instruments is that the ferrules in the wood grain,
ferrules are a completely different thing.
I didn't mean that.
And as are fjords.
Well, what can we call them?
Grooves.
Let's groovy. Go for grooves. In the finish of the instrument are massive.
Yeah, like,
they're very deep.
I think the
you could
one
probably
thing,
grate cheese.
You could, if it was a Death Star, you could fly down the middle of them.
Yeah,
and fire a photon, torpedo into an exhaust vent.
One thing we could certainly say about these instruments is they are very groovy.
Yes. So, loads of other FSRs as well. By the way, I really like the sandblasted look. I think the crimson red is a wicked
colour. The crimson
colour.
Red definitely looks very good.
Yeah.
I've not seen a blue one in the...
I just wish I had a tall plate.
In IRL.
Actually,
that would look rubbish.
Yeah, no, black guard. What
did you say? He was a tall guard.
And cream pickup covers as well.
What's wrong with you?
What the hell are you saying?
Are you a child?
It would look better than black. But I just think black... plate with black covers just looks a bit cheap.
Nah, I disagree. Matt Freeman, mate.
Yeah, but that's a different
Matt
thing.
Matt Freeman.
Mate. Anyway, so I just put up a list of the other guitars that have come in, these new FSRs. So alongside the sandblasted stuff, we've got a whole range of FSRs. Which
yeah, let's
I know
talk
you're
about
keen
all the amazing
about.
FSRs.
So FSR Japanese 54 Strat.
I just saw a list of that. That looks really cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a really good Japanese built,
well,
you know.
Who doesn't like 54 Strats? That's really cool.
And I think we actually had one last year. I think, because you were looking at the listing earlier, and we said we had a picture up from one we had last year. I've noticed that's the same. We've also got a 52 Tele in Vintage Natural, which, again, was a guitar that they did last year, and we've got videos up on the site.
Yeah.
But they seem to just be reintroducing those as well. The Fender Roosevelt Resonator CE in Moonlight Black Burst.
That sounds awesome.
What do we know about that?
I have no idea.
Great. Didn't you take some photos of that, Joe?
Which one?
The Fender Roosevelt Resonator.
It sounds like
no,
some
I didn't.
Sort of
not
American
the Resonator.
Compressor.
I haven't done that yet.
Okay. It's as far as I can remember from seeing the listing, it's kind of a flame top black sunburst resonator. Cool. You know, aluminium cone. Just looked like a cool resonator. I mean, if you're gonna resonate, it's kind of all at the same unless you do something like put a flame top on it, so did stand out definitely. Yeah.
I like that Fender resonators have the Fender
as the F holes. Yeah,
that's cool.
Sweet.
Just so you're doubly sure you're definitely playing a Fender halfway through your song, like,
in case you were in doubt.
What's I playing? Oh yeah, this one. So Fender special edition lacquer 60s Strat matching headstock.
Okay.
Surf
amazing.
Green.
Surf green and Daphne blue. They do this one in and two totally wicked colours. Matching headstock in those.
Towards the end of the day, I plugged someone in. They were comparing a Mexican standard Strat to a Mexican standard Tele, and they left and I put the guitar back up, and in the corner of my eye I just caught this green and I was like, what's that? And then I just saw a lacquer matching headstock Strat and I was just like, I just want to buy it.
It's so good.
It just looks amazing. Anything with a matching headstock.
And the rosewood on certainly both the models that we've got is really dark, and just with those excellent 50s colours, it just looks wicked.
Special edition lacquer refers to the fact it's nitro rather than polyurethane. Yeah. I mean, that's pretty good. They're coming in under 800 quid, 750 something quid.
It's wicked.
It's
definitely
worth spending the extra money to have. If you're looking at something around that sort of price, like, definitely. Well, I reckon.
But you would
going
custom
for someone,
shop with that sort
yeah,
of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I reckon you're better buying one of those than like an American special.
Oh yeah,
that will sound incredible.
Yeah, the nitro is going to make all the difference.
Yeah,
really,
absolutely.
Really is. So do you know what? I think the blue one's actually already gone because it's not on my list of new stuff here. So I think we've sold it already. Definitely got the green still in stock. Next up on the list, Fender limited edition 70s American special hardtail, 3-tone sunburst and black. Have you seen those yet? I haven't seen those yet.
This turned up and I didn't really read it. I was unboxing it and I sort of I got it out and put it in the photo booth and I was like, why on earth have I been asked to photograph a black Stratocaster? Like, why am I taking posh photos of a black Strat? I can't imagine anything more boring. Why does this need close-up pictures? It's black and it's a Strat. And then I saw that it was a hardtail.
That's so good.
It's so 70s, it's awesome.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Big headstock. Again, I think it'll just be... it's an American special, I think, but...
So jumbo
Fred.
The good thing is, it probably won't weigh as much as an original 70s Strat.
No, that's true. They would have actually picked a nice piece of wood rather than just something.
something
that vaguely resembles wood. An old railway sleeper or something. But yeah, that they look super cool. And I think, actually, for someone who wants, like, a Strat where they just want the minimum of fuss, obviously no trim, strung through body, just proper.
That's cool, man. Actually, is there anything really else? Cool. Is there anything hardtail available? Else, is there anything else hardtail available?
No, it's custom shop.
Because the Billy Corgan was hardtail, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
But that's been discount, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, that's gone.
Oh. The Robert Cray is also hardtail.
Oh, yeah, Robert Cray, yeah, because Ben in our warehouse has a Robert Cray.
They come in purple. What colour?
It's so not good. Purple, it's though,
violet.
Is it? It's
violet. That's what I call it.
Is it violet? Is it
it's violet.
Burgundy mist?
Is it no, it's violet. And they also do a...
it's a white undercoat with a not translucent. It's like an opaque purple.
So wasn't there... didn't he also... Was it Inca silver or ghost silver
as
well?
Is that lighter or darker than Burgundy mist?
It's
not metallic.
Oh, it's not metallic. Oh, right. That's why
it's just a white undercoat.
So, a couple more guitars left on this list of new stuff. Rosewood Neck American Standard Strat 3-Color Sunburst. Now, cool. These are...
Also available in...
I think it must have gone. It's not on this list anymore.
No, so I think Daphne Blue one's gone.
I think everything you've taken photos of
before. I think we had those last year as well, and they were amazing.
We should emphasise that when we say rosewood neck, we don't mean rosewood board. We mean rosewood neck. That was really lame that we all did that at the same time.
Rosewood neck. Very rosewood nice neck. Indeed. I really want to try one of those, actually. Yeah. And I think with the sunburst, that'll look really super nice.
Yeah, certainly the Daphne Blue one was probably the best thing I've ever seen.
Two more guitars, FSR Japanese 62 Strat, which none of you guys knew about, but I put some details up on the Facebook about it today. It looks just like an SRV Strat. If you want like sunburst, gold hardware, black guard.
SRV scratched into the scratch plate.
Doesn't have that.
Is the trim the right way up?
The trim's the right way up.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's also got a modern neck. So if ever wanted something that like looked like an SRV but was actually much more playable, Strat.
The SRVs are 59.
The neck on those is ridiculous.
Yeah, it's crazy, crazy, crazy.
There's only a customer who's like, I want a Strat and I want a chunky neck, and he was like, he played that and he was like, it's too big. So he bought one of the Kenny Wayne Shepherds,
yeah,
which has also got a really chunky neck, but not
is
as
that
chunky.
A hardtail actually?
No,
is
it not?
No,
okay.
No,
he loves the trim.
Does he?
Yeah. Okay. I don't know anything about Kenny Wayne Shepherd apart from when you think of a man who plays sort of country and blues called Kenny Wayne Shepherd, what do you imagine him looking like?
A shepherd.
Really tall, right?
A bit like Joseph.
I was thinking really tall, big beard, plaid shirt, long hair, cowboy hat.
So he is basically like a fashion model. He wears like sharp suits all the time.
Really?
He's like ripped and like handsome. Really weird.
So not like Joseph.
I don't know. He might have been. Definitely not you, if that's what you're talking about. And one that you can speak to, Joe, and one that I can speak to, because we both
speak to
it.
Hello.
Is. Hello.
Hello, instrument. Nice to meet you.
FSR Japanese 62 Ash Jazz Bass Walnut.
Yes. Well, you played it.
I did. It was really, really nice.
Really, really nice. You only played it because I picked it out.
That's indeed. So it's a 62 jazz, but with three controls rather than the dual concentrics.
That'd be 61.
The Fender, the 62 reissues have dual concentrics.
Do they?
Yeah, American vintage reissues. Anyway, it's ash body, but it's stained walnut, and it's really nice. Like dark hardware, like it's not black, but it's that kind of brushed. Aluminium.
Do you reckon they stain it with a walnut?
They do.
They just have
one guy's job in the factory is just rub everything with a walnut.
It's a completely gloss rosewood neck as well, which is...
What, one piece rosewood?
I think it's mounted.
Okay, right.
But it is still, the rest of it is...
Yeah, no, so it's a maple neck with a rosewood board.
Yeah, so if it's gloss rosewood...
It's not a maple neck.
Yeah, it is.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, they've just stained it in a walnut colour.
Exactly.
Oh,
if it's... So
I
if
thought it was completely rosewood.
No, it's just painted.
Oh, okay.
If it's a gloss rosewood neck, I guess you couldn't use lemon oil on it, could you?
The fretboard isn't. The fretboard's just normal.
Not, sorry.
Oh, okay,
I meant the back of the neck. I thought it was a gloss rosewood, like those... like the telly and the strat that we got.
Yeah.
Obviously, apparently not. It's maple that's been stained into a walnut-style colour.
Exactly. The neck is, like, painted, finished.
But it still looks amazing, and the instrument sounded incredible. I mean, you've got that Japanese kind of build quality, which, at that sort of level, bear in mind that's retailing at sort of 750-ish.
Yeah, that's great.
You're getting the quality that you get from an American standard.
Yeah, it's so good that even it made me enjoy playing a jazz bass. Which is something that I can never say. I really, actually, really liked it.
I was like, we were shooting a demo for another product that Mark especially wanted to do, and he asked me to go and get him an American standard P bass or something like that. Or no, you wanted one of the sandblasted.
Joe came back with something that was completely different,
and I was like, I've got you a jazz bass, and he was like, no, I don't want a jazz bass, and then he saw it. And then he played it, and he was like, yeah, we'll do the demo.
It's really nice. It's really nice, and I would say that anyone who's out there who's like not a fan of jazzes, you need to try this one. It's really good. It's like as good as I think a jazz can get.
Well, if you're not a fan of jazzes, you are a fool.
We'll see. Matt Knight, another big announcement this week. The Electro Harmonix Electric Deluxe Electric Mistress XO flanger.
Great news.
What is it?
Well, a lot of people thought that the Stereo Electric Mistress flanger that came out... XO is the name... I should probably say XO is the name that they gave to all the medium-sized box pedals.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Pedals.
I've never heard that.
Nothing to do with an exoskeleton.
No, they called them XO when they first started doing them, like 4 or 5 years ago, when we first got the first run of those pedals in that sort of size. Yeah.
Wow.
But then I think they went... How has that got any relation to what it is?
So the small ones are the Nanos.
And then XO is the name of... was the name of the series.
Nano, is that like, XO, then...
Is the X, so the XO is like the Cathedral Reverb style?
No, the Micropog is the...
It's XO is size, XO. And oh. The Little Big Muff
and the
is
Big Nano. Muff.
Yeah. No.
That's the Nano Big Muff. So you've got the...
The Freeze isn't...
Holy Grail Plus.
There's Micro as well. Isn't there?
No. Nano, XO, and then they do the bigger box ones, and then they do the original pressed sheet metal boxes, which is what the Deluxe Electric Mistress is, which is one of the most famous pedals ever.
Have they not done a small version of that?
They have not. The Stereo Electric Mistress was a different flanger because it had a chorus and a flanger, and then you had the control in the middle that went between the two.
Okay.
And obviously, the Deluxe Electric Mistress is what Andy Summers used on the Police. It wasn't a chorus. A lot of it was Electric Mistress. Which is, where people go, yeah, you want the chorus, and it's like, no, it's all. But the problem is that it's still one of the vintage style boxes, so it's absolutely massive. So it takes up an entire quarter of a normal size pedal tray.
Do they? The big box version of those, they still need their own power supply.
They'll still run off of a jack input.
They're jack, but they come with their own 9-volt supply. But they were 24-volt back in the day, and before that, they were hardwired. So this is basically exactly the same circuitry in the XO box with a stereo out.
Most decent power supplies will come with a converter for that sort of thing.
It's not
a limitation.
But the great thing is it's got that cool filter matrix mode, which turns the speed off. It shuts the speed off, it puts the flanger in one position, so you get that cool, really cool, like... It's like if you turn the speed all the way down.
Super slow.
It's almost like it doesn't move. It just doesn't move, basically.
It just kind of puts
the flanger in one position.
Like a coctoir, but not a flanger.
That's really cool.
So that, I think that'll be really good. And they're going to be... They're a little bit more expensive than the actual big box ones, but I think it's because they're probably discontinuing.
Mm. It seems funny to talk about Electro-Harmonix in a sort of new releases context with everything else, because they're just kind of doing it all the time. Like, we found out about the bass Soul Food.
Oh, yeah, I was gutted. I wasn't here for the podcast when you guys got to announce that.
Very good. Very good little pedal.
It's one of the last pedals I think they had to reissue, because I think pretty much everything they made. I was trying to do some research into all the stuff they've ever made, and like they've made some weird pedals that you know the Clockworks they've just bought out, which is it sends out 4 clock signals to sync all of other pedals.
Sorry, clock signals.
Yeah, like pulse.
So not MIDI,
like MIDI,
just like electronic,
like tap tempo type.
Oh right.
Thing.
Yeah. 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 They made that. They made one in the '70s.
Yeah, I know.
What?
I like so the one.
The one. The thing they need to reissue is the space drum.
Yeah.
What was the space drum?
It was just an electronic pad, but it was a synthesizer, and it was really famously used on "Ring My Bell." Yeah. Boo! At the beginning, it's an electroharmonic space drum, and that's all it is.
What,
it's just
one noise to make.
Boo!
Oh, okay.
Very good. The thing I think they should bring back is the. It's like a wah pedal that comes with like a tube that you connect to controls on any of your other pedals, and it turns them, the hot foot, and then you rock it like a wah, and it will turn like the speed of your.
They also had the Soul Kiss, which was a wah that was went as a plastic pipe that you put in your mouth, and it was light driven. So when you closed your mouth and it closed, obviously shut light off down the tube, the wah closed, and the more light you let into your mouth, the more the wah went up.
So good.
Optical wah.
Optical wah. Well, I mean, obviously, a lot of
effect
wahs are optical.
That you use with
like,
your
and
stuff like that. And
stuff,
it was just But yeah, they've done a lot of weird pedals.
Yeah. Yes. Hope they keep reissuing them. What else have we got on our list? So, Ibanez, the things that we know about so far. Ibanez fan fret basses.
This is the first time we've seen fan fret basses ever in
like
a standard production line.
Yeah.
Ever.
Very exciting stuff.
That is very exciting
and
stuff.
I didn't have any of the models written down here, but we kind of know all the details. There's nothing left to surprise us, is there? They're just like SR series.
They are, yes. They are just SRs, SR being, you know, by far and away the most popular Ibanez bass model at the moment. So, yes, they've introduced FanFret 5 and 6 string models in some very interesting finishes. Some
never
sort of pewtery finishes.
Never played FanFret.
You've never played a FanFret?
Nope.
My friend is an intuitive...
It just seems like
it will expand your mind. No, you'll be able to play faster and quicker and with more speed.
After playing FanFret bass, you will be able to understand Primer.
Okay, cool. I mean, I want that.
You need to play it whilst watching Primer.
I'm getting close to understanding it already.
Right. What's great is
it's like Tron the bass, but not the second one. Not the second Tron.
Oh, I like the second Tron. That's good.
You like the second Tron.
It's good.
Tron Legacy.
Yeah, it's good.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Really?
I think it's nice to see that you can get a fan fret instrument on just a cheap price. Because
it's
sub
grand.
And then people, you know, you've always thought, you're going to have to go to like Overwater or Demon.
Well,
and they're like, you know, it's been like three
Fedora.
Grand.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you'd be going to, or over
Fedora.
Here, you'd be going
Fedora.
To like someone like ACG or Let's Bass or someone like that to have those sort of things.
So it's just like, you want to play a FanFret bass? Because most people aren't going to buy one for their standard bass. They're just going to.
They'll have another one as well. Jace wants one so much he's dying in the corner.
What's the theory behind it? Is it the intonation?
Yeah, exactly that. Yeah,
it's slightly different to true temperament intonation,
where each
string has its own fret. Frets, effectively.
I saw
someone playing a thing like that the other day that had like microtonal frets on it. Have you ever seen one of those?
Yeah, just weird. When I worked my first job, the guy that I took his job from, because the guy who owned the shop was like, I can't hear him talk about microtones anymore. It's like he was an amazing player, but he got really into microtonal theory. So he was playing all these licks in microtones, and he was really into like how many different notes you could get out of one fret. So he was trying to do all these licks across like.
Surely your bending's got to be so precise though to.
I mean, this guy was an amazing player, and he was like. The theory just blew my mind.
He got sacked because he kept talking about microtonal theory.
My mate was like, I just don't want to talk about normal guitars.
Do you reckon that's like
just like tellies and that?
Do you reckon that'd hold up in court? Listen,
unfair dismissal.
He was just wouldn't sharp.
I just imagine
microtonal theory. you should have mentioned.
But
I imagine a scene where the judge is like, I don't really understand it. Can you just tell me about it? And then halfway through, I'm going, he was right.
This is boring.
But microtones comes into play a lot with like Indian style music, doesn't it? With like sitar and stuff like that.
That's why you got like the extra bending and stuff.
Isn't
on
that
sitar.
You can move the frets on the sitar.
And generally they'll have like, it's like scallop frets essentially, so you can bend up and down as well, and you can.
It's like three-dimensional play.
It is indeed. So one other thing from Ibanez, the brand new Paul Stanley signature Iceman.
There's a new Iceman. I didn't know this.
There is. The Paul Iceman Stanley signature.
Do we know Paul Stanley
from Kiss?
Oh, okay.
What do you mean? Yeah. Who's Paul Stanley?
I don't know. I don't know famous people.
You know, Gene Simmons and that.
Yeah. So Gene Simmons is the bass player, right?
Yeah.
So how can Paul Stanley have a?
Because always used to think that Gene Simmons.
The Iceman's a guitar.
I was like, oh, because you said Ibanez, and then I thought we were still talking about basses. No, like, no. Oh, wait.
No. It's a it's a guitar.
Yeah.
Is it through neck?
I don't know. Okay. I don't know the spec. I think it's possibly going to be offered in black and cracked mirror finish. I don't know that for certain.
A great thing about Kiss, actually, and I think it might be Paul Stanley, is that obviously they've got loads of merchandise, and I watched this video on them, and they're going through his rig, and they're talking to the tech, and the guy's like, oh, and I see that we've got a great bit of merchandise here. The tech, you could buy a model of, like, I think it was Paul Stanley with his bass, and you got a little action figure of the tech as well.
Yeah.
Like, in sealed packaging, like, all the techs have their own action figures.
That's amazing.
They have, like, their own shops and stuff, don't they? Like, apparently in Japan, there's, like, a Kiss megastore.
Well, with Gene Simmons,
stuff.
Every night he plays that one of the axe bases right at the end, which they build the night before, and it's one of the custom-built ones. They come flat-packed, and then they build it for the show. And that's the one where he does all the fake blood spitting.
Oh, yeah.
And then they sell it at the end of the show, and they reckon they sell one every other show at £10,000 a piece. Because they go mad for the merch. Like, the gigs is... But when we spoke to Nick Aslin, when he did that, he did a half marathon in Las Vegas.
No one knows who that is.
He's our Gibson rep.
Yeah.
And he went to see Kiss, and he said it was just amazing. Even if you don't know half the songs, it's just like an amazing show.
Yeah.
I think I know two songs.
I know.
Trying to rock and roll that one. All night.
As a child, I thought Kiss were like a rival wrestling team to like Legion of Doom.
Kiss had a wrestling team at one point.
Did they?
Yep. They had a wrestler. The Kiss wrestler.
Oh, that's cool.
I think it was in WCW.
Oh, that's amazing. That explains why I had everything them confused with Legion of Doom.
Yeah.
Kiss credit cards to Kiss coffins and everything in between.
Yeah. From birth to the grave, Kiss have got you covered.
From Genesis to what was the other one?
Pink Floyd.
No. The other end of Genesis.
Revelation.
That was it. Yeah.
One last thing to mention, and it's something that we don't know the full details on yet, but an interesting teaser this week: the new Blackstar amp. That's some sort of Bluetooth thing.
So I think they've gone.
Yes, yeah, so everyone likes that introduction to an amp. The new Blackstar Bluetooth thing.
Okay, well, so a bit of backstory. This week they put out a teaser showing a small app, like practice amp size amp, with someone doing something on their phone or changing something, the settings maybe on their phone. But they had a guitar, a bass, and maybe vocals.
Yeah.
Going through the same thing. Yeah. So, but we don't know any more details than that.
It's going to be. I mean, you know, with all these companies, you look at what's out there and you go, right, okay, we need to put that in an amp, or we need to do that. And I think they've probably looked at
Amplify.
They've looked at Amplify, and they've probably looked at Roland Street Cube and gone, we don't cover either of those markets.
Yeah.
So let's build something that covers. Yeah.
But interesting. I'd like to see Blackstar's take on it. Like we've always said about the Blackstar stuff. It's
so many companies have just kept like quiet about what they're releasing. Yeah. I think only Fender, Gibson, Ibanez are the only companies that have really kind of released their entire product range.
Taylor as well, but I thought best we not tackle that, as we probably won't know the difference between this year's and last year's. We'll have to get one of the acoustic boys on to talk through that new range. Yeah. But interesting to see what Blackstar are going to come up with. I'm quite looking forward to that, their take on the kind of Bluetooth amp. Shall we do some questions?
Yes.
So loads of stuff from the Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds group. That is where you should join up to get the kind of behind the scenes, behind the podcast, extra info that we don't give out in the podcast, and also where you can ask questions that will be answered on the podcast.
Answered.
And you can chat to other people who like guitars just as much as we do, and hopefully you do.
Can I make a note before we start this that I am not reading this first question out?
I was
going to
say, we cannot let Joe read this.
I'm absolutely not.
I will read this one. This is a long question.
Shall we go to the pub whilst he reads it? And then,
come back. No, right, okay, so this one's from Sam. And I think he meant it more for kind of the Facebook group than he did to be read out, because it's quite long. Here we go. So Sam says, debate club question. The future of solid state amps in the form of amp modelers, increases in computing power have enabled amp modelers to get so close to valves. Many, if not most professional recordings now use them over valves. Then you've got amps like the Crush Pro series from Orange, which are basic transistor amps sounding very close to valves. But are they too late? Decreases in manufacturing costs means you can now get low wattage valve amps for very little money. We've now got valve amps that switch to between 1 and 20 watts with silent recording soaks built in. Silent recording power soaks built in, sorry. The selling point of amp modelers and high quality solid state amps has always been that you can get valve tones without any of the disadvantages of valves, namely lack of reliability, the fact that you can only get power tube distortion at one specific volume, and the declining valve industry. But is that an issue anymore? Products like the EHX Magnum, pedal-sized preamps and multi-effects have negated the need to carry spare amps around. There are many inexpensive valve amps which now get good distortion at many different volume levels, and there isn't the valve industry on the rise now. Just as non-valve equipment is managed to get closer to valve sound, and has valve technology managed to rid itself of the problems which called for different solutions in the first place? Sam, that is probably the longest question we've ever had. So I think what you're saying is...
What's the question?
I can't remember. I think it was in the first... Oh, it's the future of solid state amps. So what you're saying is, basically digital stuff...
Are they too late?
Well, but digital stuff has kind of emulated valves, and valves have also moved into the market of small home use and recording amps. What is the point of a solid state amp in this day and age, I think, is what he's
when
asking.
When a valve amp is so affordable and... Now we have attenuation.
Sure, it just comes down to how much you want on your amplifier.
Yeah. I still think reliability is the biggest thing. I think for me, and certainly in choosing kind of a new amp.
You say that though, but you know, I think most amps now are well built that we don't have many reliability issues. If you've got a broken valve amp, it's going to be easier to fix than a broken solid state amp.
That's a very good point. But I also think you've kind of got like the guarantee of a valve amp breaking after a year's use of gigging. The valves are going to go after a year's use of solid gigging, which is not the case with the transistor amp.
But then if you're home use...
My argument would be that I think a solid state amp sounds the same whatever volume level you have it on, whereas valve amps do, like Sam says, they do change depending on what volume you're using them at. And sometimes, even though I really like the TubeMaster that I've got, the TubeMaster 5 combo, I do struggle sometimes, particularly like late at night, to get it to a volume that it kind of sounds good. Like there's definitely a point where it starts to sound good, you know. That's where I think something like, you know, the Crush Pro, they sound the same all the way up or down on the volumes.
Because personally, I wouldn't record with a solid state amp or a modelling amp. I'd rather record with a valve amp. But
when I go on tour, I take an Orange Tiny Terror, and my guitarist takes his Rocker 30 and the hovercraft thing, and you know, he had to replace his valves in the Rocker 30 last week. I've never had to do anything to the Tiny Terror. That's the second time he's had to replace the valves in the Rocker since I've been in a band with him, and I've never had to do anything to the Tiny Terror in that time. And I think that's maybe the place for, I mean, okay, that's valve front end that amp, but it's still a digital power amp.
I suppose it's just pros and cons to both, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think valve amps have got smaller because more people are using them at home.
I think, yeah, it's different for bassists and guitarists.
But then you could say the same thing for digital stuff, is that digital's gone to the point of, like, the Kemper, where
Kemper, Axe FX, you know. It's...
Because for a long time, digital stuff didn't sound very good, very loud, and valve amps only sounded good really loud. So it was kind of one covered to one, and now the other way around. Your valve amps sound really good at low volumes, and a lot of digital stuff sounds really good.
There's a place for both of them. I think whilst I've been kind of, I guess I was fighting the corner for digital amps there, I think that valve amps are still infinitely better. Yeah. And yes, now that they're more reliable and now we have attenuation, why not?
Yeah. I mean, it's bonkers how much they build into a small amp. If you look at the new Mesa Boogie Mark 5 minis, which I plugged in, I mean, the amount of stuff you've
got
in there.
That's that little small head, right?
I mean, it's just crazy.
Yeah.
For 1300.
Was it three channels and...
Two channels, three different preamps for each channel, foot switchable EQ, effects loop, switch foot switchable, reverb,
five-band graphic.
Yeah, and the switchable.
Which is switchable.
And switchable output as well, 25 or...
10.
Yeah, it's bonkers. Right, how much you've got on there?
So, Carl says, a Fender Road Worn 60s Jazzmaster. When? How much? Tell me more if you know anything.
Well, this was one of the things I was trying to talk about earlier, and you...
So we know lots, but we can't tell you anything about it.
No, it's not new.
It is new.
I don't think it is.
It is new.
Okay,
yeah, well, it's part of the it's part of the 2015 range.
Okay.
That I'm not sure we're allowed to talk about.
Okay, fine. We won't talk about it then.
I mean, I really want it because they sound incredible.
Yeah, you were the one that told us it was embargoed.
Well, we won't. I was talking about loads of other stuff.
The answer to the question is when, soon, how much, I can't tell you, and we do know more, but we can't tell you either.
Okay. Okay,
that
fine.
We included this.
Fine. Our very own Matt Knight says, so.
Wait, do you want to.
Yeah, do you want to just read your own question out?
Say it as you were saying it whilst you typed.
I'm thinking of swapping my Strymon Big Sky for an Eventide Space.
Why?
Thoughts?
Thoughts.
Why?
Well,
why?
Well. The Eventide is on the pedal board of both guitarists in Mutiny on the Bounty, one of my favourite bands of all time. And they don't have any Strymon gear.
I mean, partly
boards.
Why? Boredom.
Okay.
I was like, I want to buy a new pedal.
He's had the Big Sky for 5 minutes.
So at the end of last year, you definitely said, my pedal board is finished.
Yeah, but that's always a lie, isn't it? That's, I mean, clearly. You know, that's the last shot I'll have this evening on Friday night. It's fine. You'll go home, you'll buy more booze, and you'll try and drink it.
Yeah.
And with pedal boards, you'll go, my
night,
pedal board
alcoholic.
Is done.
Alcoholic.
Yeah.
Just one more.
Yeah, just one more. And but pedal-holic. The thing is, I am... really trying to operate one in, one out, so I'm not just gonna.
Yeah, but what about your pedals?
So the plan is to swap the Strymon, which you really like.
Yeah, I just fancy trying something different.
I think you are going to regret.
Well, actually, instantly, a lot of people were like, look, space really good, Big Sky, even better.
You know, I think what you should do is. I'm going to bring us back to the start of the podcast, which is just buy the Eventide H9 and then just buy the black hole algorithm because that's the only one you're ever going to use anyway.
I think the thing is, I was kind of going through, I was thinking about it a lot, and I was like, actually, the space tends to have maybe slightly more digital sounding effects, but it's got some cooler, weirder reverbs.
The
Strymon covers a lot of the algorithms are very similar.
Yes,
but it covers the basic sounds.
Yeah,
really well.
They're more
and actually,
cut dry.
On my pedal board, I actually really only use spring, plate, and a little bit of whole reverb. And the other thought I had was two normal sized Strymon pedals fit in the space of one big pedal. So I was like, why don't I just get a Blue Sky because it's got shimmer and a big plate sound on
Flint.
It, and the Flint.
Yeah,
I'll get the Flint.
The Flint, I...
Because the Flint you can leave on all the time for like a small reverb, but then you've got the trem at the end of your board, and then the Big Sky, you can have a sound, you can have a sound, and then you've got the favourite switch, which you can always then switch in for more ambient sounds.
I think if you... It's difficult. I think unless you get a Blue Sky to replace your Big Sky, I think you'll regret it.
Yeah,
I also don't think that's an argument against buying an Eventide Space.
Because
they're wicked.
Don't sell any more pedals that you shouldn't.
No, I know.
You sold one of the best pedals you've ever owned to me the other week.
I know, but it's one of those things where it's just like, I don't know, you kind of want to try more stuff out. But then again, that's partly when we talked about last week why I put that little external loop on the pedal board. So it's like, if you want to try stuff out, you don't have to dismantle your whole board to just plug it in. But it was a kind of crazy thought, and actually I got shot down straight away. Everyone was like, no, you shouldn't. Or buy an H9, which is Jay put. I think that would be the thing. But I could buy an H9 and a Blue Sky.
I mean, I really like the Eventide pedals. I think they're very, very good. I realise that I sound a bit like a broken record here, but that black hole sound that you get with the Eventide Space
The thing is that
I reckon they came up with that and then they were like, this is so good, we need to like just build
a pedal around it.
Yeah.
I think it's one of those things where I was like, I thought maybe I'll just buy a space, but at like 300.
They are expensive.
But they're cheaper than the Big Sky.
Yeah, but you already own a Big Sky.
I know, but that's the thing, I can't afford to buy, so I'd have to, you know. I think it was just a moment of madness, perhaps.
Let's do. Ollie says, I've got about £100 to spend on a crazy modulation pedal. I've already got a phaser and a chorus. Any recommendations would be welcome. Now, this actually went on a bit further in the thread, and he said he could possibly have enough money to get a Strymon Deco, because he was also thinking about a delay. So that's got like tape flanging, and it's got the delay. So I said that might be a good option. If it was only 100 quid, what would you get?
Do you know what I plugged in? It's not crazy, but it covers the sounds that he hasn't already got on there. Moor Soul Shiver.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, the Soul Shiver. I think that's their tremolo.
It's a chorus, a vibrato, and a rotary.
Oh, that's what it is.
Really?
It's got a rotary.
Yeah. It's got a rotary, and I plugged it in, and we AB'd it with the Strymon Lex, and I was like, that sounds really good. Like for 64 quid. Yeah. I was like, this sounds ridiculously good. It's got no volume control on it, but they've somehow built it, and it's at perfect unity volume.
Really?
You just turn it on, and there's no volume drop and no volume increase. It's dead on. I was like, because I turned what I thought was the volume control, and it adjusted a different parameter, and I was like, that's mental. They've got it like spot on. But for their 65 quid, and they you cover those three sounds, I think that's pretty good.
Anything else, chaps, you think for 100 quid is worth a look at?
Mod Factory.
Well, yeah.
Again, Moore are going to wipe the floor with this. Yeah. For under £100.
If you want something weird and you can spend a little bit more, how much is a the Ibanez Echo...
Echo Shifter.
I think they're like 130.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm putting it out there.
They're so cool, man.
Second hand at the moment, we've got a Boss PS2.
Yeah, it's quite cool. The pitch shifter.
Yeah, a pitch shifter and delay in one.
Wicked I used to have the rack mounted version of that. The mini rack
mounted.
Why
did you have that?
The mini rack mounted version.
Why did you sell that?
Because they're only tiny.
Why did you buy that?
I think I bought it on eBay when I was about 16, 17 for about
30. Did you know what it was? Did you just see the word Boss and some like glimmering lights?
I saw Boss and I saw it was old and I was like, I'm going to buy that. And it was amazing.
They're really good.
It was so weird because you could turn. It had a pitch shifter on it, but you could put it down a fourth to baritone, turn off the standard tuning, and it was almost polyphonic. But then if you turn the delay level all the way up and turn the wet signal off, or the dry signal, you got like this really weird. But it had like, you could put like, it somehow, even though it wasn't on there, you could put it in reverse. Somehow it's like, if you turn the delay to a certain point, the delay started coming back the other way.
Wow.
But my mate was like so impressed, he went, oh, I'm going to buy one. And then I saw a listing where a guy was selling the entire, he's on the Facebook group, he's got the entire rack set. It was something like 10 different bits of rack gear. He paid like 150 quid for something.
A weird bit of Boss history, that, isn't it? They did all those weird half
in
you
fact, Steph, who's on the group metals. Who works for us, still uses the tuner.
Really?
Yeah,
the rack tuner,
TU50, which is the mini rack tuner they did. I think it's TU50.
Wow.
But they did a power supply that powered the whole box. It came in like one huge box and you could buy all the bits.
Bonkers. Just don't get systems like that anymore. No.
They look like old stereo separate systems. That's what they look like.
Can I just throw in there Digitech bass synthwire, whether you're a bassist or a guitarist? I mean, what are they, 40 quid? Something like that.
I don't even think it's that much money, is it?
Definitely underneath the £100.
Yeah. And that's probably one of the best pedals you can buy for under 50 quid.
Just buy three. See, that'd be really weird because they don't track particularly well at the best of times.
Do they track? I mean, you just turn them on and they just kind of go like.
Could go weird noises. MXR Blue Box. That's something else that's weird.
Really, I suppose they're not really modulation, but it is weird, isn't it?
Yeah, they are very, very weird. Do you want to talk into your microphone?
Yes, sorry.
Good. Okay, let's do two more questions. Carl says, which tuner is the fastest, most precise and most reliable for a pedal board?
TU3.
I'm going to say Boss TU3. J-Cross?
I'm also going to say Boss TU3. And Matt Knight is going to go, I really like the TC Polytune, but like, I do understand why you go with the Boss.
See, I've got both. Maybe I'll put them both on my pedal board and just have a tuner at the beginning.
AB the tuner.
Tuning challenge.
The thing is...
Maybe what we should do is go from a Boss ABY, AB, no, we should go from a, the one of the Electro-Harmonix
switchblade
into a TU3
and
a TC Polytune.
And see which tunes the guitar quicker.
If you're using bass, then it actually has to be the TU3 because the, as I recently discovered, the TC, it struggles a little bit.
With bass, really? Isn't that a firmware update, though? Do you not need to plug it in?
The Polytune 2, it depends which Polytune, because I think the Polytune 2 was completely updated and it's more accurate now.
Is it?
It's got more LEDs
Wonderful.
In it.
The problem is with bass that it seems to hear some harmonics at some point. And do you know how the Polytune switches to that cut screen where it just shows you, rather than saying what note you're playing, whether you're flat or sharp, it shows you all six.
All of them,
and it just does that. And I found that, like, trying to tune I recently got one and tried to tune.
You know, you can put it in bass mode, though, and it'll only give you four.
Oh, does it?
That's why. No,
that's why.
You can put it in there's guitar. So
okay, well, that's like, still a reason. That's still a reason. Tuners should not be complicated.
In terms in terms of function, obviously, the Polytune, you hold down the button and it'll give you instant drop D mode. So if you use drop D, it'll always do drop D.
See, but then I don't care. The TU3 tunes my bass.
Yeah, I mean, but
without
then you can
me
do
having to press any buttons.
The Polytune's better for people who do lower tunings because it's programmed to do half a step down all the way down to seven steps. And then it's got bass specific modes, but it'll do up to six string bass as well. So you can do four, five, or six string bass.
Oh, that's quite good.
So
that's
it does the low end really well.
The TU3 would do that without you changing any of those modes.
But the TU3's got a buffer in it, so it's actually a really good thing to have at the front of your pedal board. The only reason I use a Polytune Mini is because it fits on my pedal board.
Pedal board realistic.
That's definitely an advantage. The thing I don't get about the Polytunes is why would you need a true bypass tuner?
Well, that's the thing. With mine, it runs out of... So the way my pedal board's wired up, it's always on, basically, but it's on a separate signal.
Right.
So if I mute the signal, it'll go to the tuner, and then you can just tune. But then when it's on, it's always running. So with the Polytune, because it's always running, if I'm really out and I just, you know... just hit all six strings, I can just quickly go without having to
leaves the trails from your delays or whatever. That's very cool,
but yeah, because it's on all the time, it's just I can just see it and it's always on, and it's just small and it sits in the corner.
How do you change the settings on a Polytune?
The button on the side.
Sweet.
RTFM,
thanks.
But the Polytune, like the Boss one, obviously does all the daisy chain outs and everything, but the Boss one is good because
it's Boss, it's solid.
Yeah, and that buffer does make a difference.
Yeah,
so I reckon we should take a TU3 and a Polytune and throw them both at a wall.
Throw them both at Mark. Yeah, a wall. Yeah.
I think TU3s. I mean, I've got a TU3 and I've got a Polytune Mini, but like I said, the only reason I'd probably stick with the Mini at the moment is because it fits them
smaller. Let's do one last question, chaps. Gavin says, stickers on your guitar, yay or no way? Matt Knight.
No way.
No, not now.
No, I used to be. I used to have stickers. In fact, my first guitar is still at home with my parents, and it has got stickers on it.
What sort of stickers are you rocking?
Whatever was in Total Guitar.
Okay.
Oh, really? Oh, dude.
You rock! ABC, Metallica. Yeah, Saint Anger. No, actually, that was a bit later. No, definitely not a Saint Anger sticker.
J-Cross, yay or no way?
I don't have any stickers on any of my guitars.
You did... No, that bass wasn't yours.
Did you have some on your 7-string Ibanez?
I did put one sticker on my 7-string Ibanez.
Which was?
It was a sticker that said Plea for Peace.
Okay.
Which was a campaign that a guy called Mike Park, who ran a record label called Asian Man Records that me and Mark are really into. He also ran like a
Plea for Peace campaign,
yeah. And I had a sticker that said, and I put that on there, and the guy that I sold the 7-string to immediately went, I'm taking that off.
I'm stuck an I'm angry sticker on this.
On my vintage modified jazz bass, which I sold after I bought my P bass, I did have a sticker of my friend's band on the back. But those are the only two stickers I've ever put on a guitar.
Joe Bratton.
When I was 16, and I think this will be the standard thing with whether you should have stickers or not, I had an OLP Stingray in large flake blue. And I was in a punk band called Four Dead Squirrels. And
how did we not know that?
You see, the names of the punk bands I've been in were Product 44. How close is that to Plus 44?
Okay, yeah.
Bear in mind that was years before, and we used to do Blink Clubbers.
They were obviously big fans.
Yeah, Product 44. Product 44, Undergarment.
Undergarment. Dreadful band name.
That was pretty bad, yeah. And then Four Dead Squirrels, and then Superheroes Anonymous was my last punk band.
God.
Yeah. Anyway.
Superheroes Anonymous?
Yeah.
That's really weird.
Superheroes Anonymous,
because Mark's in...
Random Heroes.
Random Heroes.
That's really weird. I know. See, we talked to Captain Everything.
In 18. Did you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you really?
Yeah, well, we were the only other punk band
in Watford. The only other band in Watford, yeah.
Anyway, what's
anyway,
stickers?
Sorry, yeah, I had the OLP Stingray, which was, I bought a Wild West sticker book and I covered it in pictures of
cowboys. As in Wild Wild West of Will Smith?
I know, but that would have been way better.
Just like the stickers of Will Smith and a giant metal spider.
Wicked wah.
No, they were just like pictures of cowboys and stuff.
Of course.
Actually, so, I do have one sticker on my 80s Ibanez. I've got a little Lego sticker on the back.
Right, but just a Lego man or something.
It's just Lego man. Right. But I mean, it's an 80s Ibanez in fluorescent orange. It's got to have some sort of sticker on
here's
it.
Here's the reasons why stickers are a nay. Because years later, I took a look at my OLP bass as an adult and I thought, this is actually an alright bass. I took the stickers off and the bass was sun bleached underneath the stickers in the places where the stickers had been, so I had to have the bass refinished.
And then you've regretted that decision ever since.
Well, yeah, seeing as I went for a sort of some sort of green moss.
Moss green,
yeah. It was an awful colour choice, and I regret it.
Did you just get it done at the car place?
My dad runs a classic car garage, so I went up there and used his spray booth. I didn't take off any of the finish.
Because
it was large flake blue, of course it's slightly like mottled. The finish is not pure where all the flakes are, so it just looked really mottled.
Did it look like, I get the impression that it looked like, remember when you watched Blue Peter and they're like
Tracy Island,
they're getting you to make Tracy Island and they're like, you want that some texture?
Did you have a 3G AstroTurf guitar? So we had,
yeah, it did. But that was kind of the problem. The problem was that it looks like a football pitch.
Three,
two.
Anyway,
you haven't still got that bass.
No, I actually gave it away. A friend of mine.
This whole story's brilliant.
A friend of mine wanted a Stingray.
That's
neck.
Funny because I had Tracy Island and I gave that to like my cousin.
The bin. Is that where your bass went? The bin.
Yeah, essentially, I gave it away to some fella on like UK Gear Exchange or whatever who was looking for an OLP neck, and I was like, just have this. Just take it.
And then he's like, sweet, that's a 500 quid bass. Someone sold one of those on eBay for like 500 quid.
The old OLP Stingrays, they're starting to go for some money.
I mean,
now,
that finish is one of the best finishes.
Yeah,
it was.
Not the moss.
Not the Branton Green.
Branton moss.
Basically, Branton. I took one of the coolest instruments I've ever owned and I systematically destroyed it.
So my bass, the transparent orange P bass, which is the one I've had for ages, used to be covered in stickers. So on the back,
I'm not surprised. It's the worst colour I've ever seen.
On the back, it had loads of band stickers, and on the front, it had the Sun Records logo on the scratch plate. Then I broke that scratch plate, changing it. So I had a mirror scratch plate, and then I broke that. So I put the white plate that's on there now and took all the stickers off the back except for one that just says Sharp Grandad, which is the name of a local band, but also a brilliant sticker.
The thing I always thought about stickers is where do you put the first one? Because it looks cool when you've got loads and just overlaying stickers, but do you put the first one?
It doesn't look cool. It doesn't look cool.
Yeah, I'm with Jake.
It doesn't look cool when you've got loads.
I reckon you can get away with one. If you just have one placed
What about Rivers from Weezer? His guitar looks kind of cool. It's got loads of stickers.
What, his Strat?
Yeah, it's got all stickers on it. Anyway, I think we should call it an evening.
Yeah, we're totally off topic.
I'm just thrown by the moss story. So let's say night. Thanks for everyone.
My Sabutio bass.
It's a Sabutio.
Yeah, it's a beauty. Oh. Thanks for sending your questions. You can do that at facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds group. You can also join the GAK page, facebook.com/GAK music, or join us on Twitter at GAK_co_UK, or on the Instagram, which Joe Branton has been failing to keep up with, which is we are at... we're just GAK_music,
that's
aren't we?
That's the one, yeah.
Or you can speak to us individually. You can get me on Twitter at @mark_random. JCross, where can they get you?
Shoot me an email, j.cross@gak.co.uk. Sorry. My Twitter is JAYBM1.
Matt Knight.
You can email me matt.knight@gak.co.uk, or you can tweet me matt_knight, that's Knight with SIE on the end, or on the group.
On the group.
On the group. on the group.
Meet us on the Facebook.
Meet us on the Facebook.
Got a nice look.
Joe Branton. Where can people get in touch with you?
You can tweet me at Yosef_900 or alternatively find me on Instagram at Yosef900 without the underscore. Of course you can always email me. Email me at joe.branton@gak.co.uk for all claims. Terms apply.
Talking of your Twitter handle, I noticed the other day that someone who I knew but I didn't know why had followed me on Twitter, and I just for some reason I clicked on who else they'd followed, and I saw that they had also followed Mark, they followed Matt, they'd followed Yosef900, which is like not an account at all.
And oh, I was no. like,
yeah.
Oh, anyway, yeah. Right, let's call it a night. Thanks for listening this week, and we'll see you next week.
Yeah, cheers, bye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Yeah.
Yes, bye. 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 Bye.
Why would you ever use that as your stage name? I mean, like Sting. You know, I kind of Love understand, it. But no. Slash.
Just that noise. It's think so annoying.
Just why?
Right.
Why would you ever be called that? Yeah, I'm going to call myself
Put
Piss.
That at the end.